abdominal aneurysm repair. So that will encompass and require you to bring all together issues with surgery, basic surgery, on top of it being a vascular surgery. So that's going to require hemodynamics as well as the issues with an older person in anesthesia. Then also you're going to have to know your drugs again. So be sure and really review your drugs. So what are the drugs that we see used commonly after with a patient who has had bypass? That's a question. Either one, pre-op, intra-op, post-op. Okay, so in a second, how's that going to affect them post-op?
Wait, what are you talking about, the aspirin? Someone here in Alexandria said aspirin preoperatively.
Exactly, and many of them are on Plavix. So how is that going to, well, Prevagil, so how is that going to impact them post-operatively for any vascular surgery? So what can we do to, what are we often expecting to do to moderate that response? Aspirin doesn't affect your PT and PGT. Surgery does. But how are we going to moderate the effect? Can we reverse aspirin?
Give them some platelets.
No. So what can we do to moderate the effect?
What is the effect? Bleeding, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what are we going to do about the bleeding? How can we
assess bleeding?
Yeah.
Assess
bleeding. Okay, well, but that's not the stop it.
What does aspirin do? How does aspirin act?
Is it giving them platelets?
No.
Ms. Vaughn.
The A word?
What? Do we give them platelets? Platelets.
For what?
Emsar?
What she's talking about.
No.
Okay.
You don't just willy-nilly get platelets.
Okay.
You gotta have a reason.
It is
Okay. All right. How does aspirin work?
If it prevents
platelet aggregation for the life of those platelets, what can we do to moderate the response, or, in other words, reverse the effect of aspirin postoperatively?
Give them platelets.
FFP, which is fresh frozen plasma, which has platelets in it. Somebody else's, who hopefully wasn't on aspirin. Good answer. All right, so
okay,
what
so
about post-op? What kind of drugs are we expecting?
Somebody said beta blockers.
Really? Post-operatively? That's the first drug that comes to your mind. Remember, the first problem post-operatively was what? What's the first nursing problem post-operatively, typically?
Bleeding.
You gotta think like a nurse, you guys. You're about to get...
Right.
Is this a cabbage?
Yes.
They're on the ventilator.
You haven't read your book. There's a care plan in your book. And the first problem these people face after bypass surgery is because their heart has been stopped, cut on, and cardiac output. That sick heart has been slammed during surgery. So we're going to have to do some preload, afterload, contractility, and heart rate modification. Now, what are the drugs?
Vasopressors.
There you go. That's one. That would be for what?
What did they say?
Somebody said, what you said over there? Pressors and inotropes.
So that's going to help with contractility. Not everybody will be on Primacor because usually you have to look at their ejection fraction preoperatively. And they may or may not postoperatively. But what are we going to do about preload? Let's start there. I loaded a fill-in-the-blank study guide for you guys. Obviously, y'all haven't done it. I can't help you in any other way. Preload is what? What are we going to do to fix preload?
There's no fluids.
And what kind of fluids?
They said they never got the study guide.
It's loaded on Moodle. It's called MIT. It's up there. But anyway, so what? What fluids?
I'm confused about that.
I'm so confused.
I need an answer.
I don't know what the question is.
What fluids? Are they going to
be on lactating ringers?
Well, what's typically their problem? What did Denise say was typically their problem after surgery? Low or high? What kind of fluids are you going to use to increase preload?
Albumin.
There you go. And it's 5%, not the 25%. The 5% is vascular expansion. And then normal saline is the regular hydrating IV. Very good. Okay, so how would we even know that their preload is low?
How do we know their preload is low? Blood pressure? Cardiac output?
Yes. You have a PA catheter. You have a Swan-Ganz catheter, usually in their IJ, so you need to be sure you know how to take care of that. Now, what numbers come off of that PA catheter that tell you preload?
CBT.
Is that what y'all say, CBT?
That's it.
Oh, and what else? You got a PA catheter.
PAP and PAWP.
Yeah,
wedge pressure.
Where'd she go? She's just like, nope, bye. She is not pleased with us.
Yeah, CBP does preload. It measures preload.
Oh, PA pressures are going to be telling you they need volume.
Has a case study on that. Maybe that's what she's talking about.
Where?
She said it's a blank study. Bench pressure. What else y'all say? SVR.
That's SVR. SVR is the afternoon. Is Miss Akins tripping?
How about pulmonary artery diastolic too? We don't wedge it except for once.
So no wedge.
So yes,
wedge. All right. What about afterload?
SVR and PVR.
Tell them there's a problem with afterload after surgery.
It's fine. I'm new to
this. Tell them
What am I supposed to say? What? I'm looking at that stupid form.
What's the problem with afterload after surgery?
Tell them SVR and PVR.
SVR and
PVR.
PVR.
SVR is systemic, that's right. Okay, so now contractility is going to be cardiac output, cardiac index, and heart rate's of course going to be their continuous monitor pattern. What kind of dysrhythmias do we really watch for after surgery?
Any.
They say AFib and
Yep, 20%, 30%, according to who you read, go into AFib. So I'm going to watch for that. What drugs can we use for that?
Coumadin.
Amiodarone.
Do I say
amiodarone?
No, don't say
that.
I don't think so. Not after surgery. We're not going to try to bind calcium. They need all they've got. So what's the primary drug for AFib?
Amiodarone.
After bypass
going
surgery.
Going for 20.
Amiodarone.
Somebody said amiodarone here.
I like that drug. Thank
and
you very
we
much.
Here we go, amiodarone and Nackish.
We skipped a couple or three or four drugs that we use for inotropic and for cardiac output, cardiac index. What are those?
The inotropic drug is
epi, dopamine, Mylaron, and Dish.
Very good. What else?
Dopamine, Primacor.
Dopamine to jack up their heart rate, so that's not used often. But what else is used?
What about Milarone?
Yeah,
Milarone. Yeah, we already said that one. That's good. Yeah. What else? There's two more.
Did Johnson?
Yeah. We want to wait for 3 days. Yeah.
We need
a pressure, and we need it now.
How do you get serious?
How about norepinephrine?
Neosinephrine and
norepinephrine.
Lovafib. Very good. Now, for afterload reduction, what are we going to use for afterload reduction?
Beta-blockers.
It's kind of stiff, especially with hypothermia. So their afterload, their SVR is often high. So what can we use to reduce afterload?
Beta-blockers.
Which one? But remember, you're dancing with the devil with a beta blocker right after surgery because of blood pressure. All right, so there are the drugs that you need to know. You need to know the side effects. And you don't need to know the doses, not yet, but you do need to know the side effects very well. When to use it, what it's for, and the side effects. Okay. So, now, what about pre-op teaching?
Chlorhexidine bath, chlorhexidine bath, when they wake up, then they're not going to be able to talk because they're going to be on the ventilator.
All right. Now, do y'all have any specific questions about bypass surgery? And the care of patients who have had it?
I don't even know what I don't know now. I thought I knew
what
stuff.
What can kill them? What can kill them? In that first 4 hours, that's the real bad time. First hour and then first 4 hours. What can kill them?
They can get cardiac tamponade.
Somebody said clots.
Somebody said cardiac tamponade. Yeah.
Very good. So what are the signs?
Increase the pressure.
What else?
Increase CVP. Pulsus paradoxus.
Yeah.
What else? JVD.
Somebody said JVD.
Oh, they already said.
What about their chest tube output?
It's being increased.
Is it going to be a lot coming out or a little?
No.
Or none?
She's talking about a lot.
How much?
Right. Clotted off. Right.
Too much.
Yeah.
Okay, so not coming out because it's
clotted off. What else can kill them?
Change in blood pressure that causes the graft to collapse?
Mm-hmm.
Or blow?
Not that one.
It's too high.
Dysrhythmias, VTAC, VTIP. All right, so we have a temporary pacer. So
okay,
pacer. Any questions on temporary pacing? No questions on bypass, pre-op, post-op pair? All right, any questions on temporary pacing? Because they always have temporary wires and they're usually connected in case we need it. So what are we going to be doing? What are the interventions for someone who has temporary pacer?
Make sure they don't pull the wires.
Any questions on temporary pacing?
What are y'all saying? Make sure the area is clean. Temporary pacemaker doesn't go here though. They want to know what pacemaker are you talking about? A temporary pacemaker, that's what she said.
Yeah, we're talking about pacemaker.
They
want to
know which,
like,
which one?
At the cardio.
Temporary pacer, the one that you have to have gloves on and all that. That's the one she's talking about.
As transcutaneous epicardial is the
one.
Any other questions about temporary pacing? You know, the care of the wiring system, the connections, you know how to recognize the rhythms, and you're recognizing the rhythms when there is a dysfunction, and you know about the functionality of sensing, pacing,
yes.
And
know that.
Be able to recognize loss of capture, loss of sensing. You'd be able to recognize that.
Yeah, I recognize that. That's the easy thing.
Any other questions on temporary pacing? What about permanent pacers? Any questions on the pre-op, post-op care of a patient who's had a permanent pacer or AICD implanted? You understand immediately post-op why you might want to put a shoulder immobilizer on them?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Just for 24. And you understand why you would tell them they need to be doing no abduction with that arm. And you know that when they go home, they don't need to be picking up anything heavier than a big book or a milk jug for about 6 weeks with that arm. And what are the restrictions that they have for life?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any questions on permanent pacing? Okay. The next thing that is on this test will be pulmonary, and that includes ARDS and acute respiratory failure. Any questions on ARDS? Or you can recognize respiratory distress. You know exactly what to do. You know about the different types of O2 adjuncts, the nursing care required for someone who's on prongs versus high flow versus BiPAP versus V-mask. And each of those concepts, you want to say, what do I assess? What do I plan to do? What are the interventions that need to be made to keep that person safe? And that includes home care. Many of our patients go home on home O2. So that comes into the context of acute respiratory failure because many of them still, when they go home, many of them have chronic lung for a long time, especially our COVID patients. So what do we want to be sure? We had a patient in the burn unit this week who was burnt pretty bad. And the, I can't remember if she was 40 or 60%. Y'all might help me. You're still there and we're in the burn unit. But that's how she burned herself. She was smoking while she was on HOMO too. And burned herself bad. Usually it's just a flash burn. They'll come in with just a flash burn of their face and not require too much hospitalization. But this lady really fried herself. Okay, so... any other questions on acute respiratory failure? You know the numbers, you know your ABGs, you know how to interpret ABGs, right? I'm not hearing any questions. This is Q&A. I got a lot of texts this week, weekend, so this is your turn, this is your time to ask questions. What about ARDS? You know how to recognize it, how to treat it? Who's at risk for it? Stages? The nursing care? Nursing problems that face them? All right, any questions on any of that? Last call.
Oh, that seems like straightforward, right. And then she has questions.
All right, mechanical ventilation. Any questions on ET tubes, trays, and the nursing care required for them?
I feel good with that. Like out of everything, I feel good about that.
You know the about RSI, rapid sequence intubation. What are the drugs that are typically used for rapid sequence intubation and in what form? That's a question. I'm waiting for an answer.
It's a sedative and a paralytic.
What's your answer? Propofol, Atomidate.
Sedatives.
A paralytic.
Then a paralytic.
Can you give propofol and Atomidate?
You gotta get a sedative and then a paralytic.
Yes. Right.
For rapid sequence intubation.
Yes. Right.
Otherwise, reversal would be mean. Mm-hmm.
You should have got your house.
Questions on suctioning. Steps involved.
Steps
and post procedure issues. All right. Mechanical ventilation. What's pressure support?
That's where it pushes the air in. Gives you a certain volume.
What's pressure support?
Okay, explain it, Keisha. What is pressure support?
It's helping you that breath.
Okay, it's helping you to take... It's only an inhalation and it's helping you to take a breath. The machine helps you to... Inhale.
You initiate it.
Right.
Well, you mean pressure support as a mode or pressure support as a setting?
The last setting to when you get
okay, it's a setting.
The last setting before
we get the information.
Yes.
If you're talking about a mode, it's the one that helps them to take it.
Right.
Overcome the
no. All right. Yeah, it helps them to it reduces their NIP. They can increase their NIP. Okay. What about PEEP? What is PEEP?
What's PEEP?
It helps the
collapse.
Right. It helps the helps the alveoli
stay open
at the end of expiration.
Makes it easier to do the next one.
And there's one of them. There's two advantages and two big disadvantages.
Two advantages and two disadvantages. What are the disadvantages? Think of it. Think. You're pushing pressure in there. Pushing pressure in.
Baritrauma.
Pneumothorax.
Barotrauma and pneumothorax.
Barotrauma?
Yeah.
Subcutaneous emphysema is the other one.
Oh, yeah. Subcutaneous emphysema. Remember that? The right place under the chest, under the skin. Crackly. Oh, yeah.
And what does it do to cardiac output if you've got them on hot feet?
It decreases cardiac output.
So. What would I mean by high P?
What's high?
Five is
more than five. Ten.
There you go. More than five. Five is called physiological P a lot of times because it just helps maintain FRC and kind of make up for all that tubing that you've added, which is
that's P decreases your
decreases. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some of the other modes. What is PRVC? Pressure regulated volume control.
You're going to get a preset amount of oxygen.
Like,
it's just,
they have a set
volume.
Are they initiating the breath?
That volume that is set.
They initiate the breath with their nip.
The nip all you want, but it's still going to give you the volume that it's set on.
Right.
And if you drop below a preset number of breaths, it'll breathe for you.
Yeah. Do they? Now, the question you want to ask yourself is, this is spontaneous mode, or is this a control mode where the machine is actually initiating the breath?
Control.
Or controlling the breath?
Yeah.
Okay. What about, now this is one that she talked about, you don't see it used very often anymore, but what is SIMV, synchronized intermittent mandatory ventilation?
It's going to give you a certain volume SIMV. At a certain rate, and then you can nip all you want in between.
It's in the article.
If the patient breathes, they get their own tidal volume, and this is the one used after like bypass surgery a lot.
Yeah. So they initiate the breath, or if they're not breathing,
the machine initiates
at what tidal volume?
Whatever set.
If it's a machine breath, what tidal volume?
Whatever it's set to.
I think it's 60.
Whatever the. What do y'all say? No, it's going to give what tidal volume?
She didn't. Whatever the set. Well, she used 500 as an example, but.
Per kilogram?
According to their ideal body weight is what we have. That's what you say, right?
According to their ideal body weight. That's
and the question was asked this weekend. The textbook says 6 to 10. Mm-hmm. Denise. And we function pretty much along with respiratory protocols, and it's usually 5 to 7 milliliters per kilogram. So not to be confused on testing, we'll stipulate, you know. But the thing is, if you use the 10 that the textbook talks about, that is a lot. So for most of our patients. So what would be the problem, like in the 80s, late 70s when I graduated, we used a liter all the time. It was arbitrary. So what was the problem with using that high tidal volume?
Oxygen toxicity.
What could that do to the blood gas? This is what I'm asking.
What would the high tidal volume do to the blood gases? That's the question. No answers.
Anybody in Alec know?
I go with oxygen toxicity.
Wait,
It's high.
Think about it. If you kept taking a big, deep breath over and over, 20 times a minute, what's that going to do to your blood gases? Very good. Respiratory alcohol is just...
Yeah,
so and we can't fix
gonna,
that real
it's
quick.
It's look like
so that was bad. So now what we really do is try to go the lowest. Remember, our optimal goal is to go with the low, get the highest O2 sat or PaO2 that we can get with the lowest FiO2. Mm-hmm. And also with the lowest tidal volume. So we're not over breathing. We're allowing the patient to kind of set the stage for what they need. And that's why the control modes are really kind of not being favored anymore unless the patient is really in bad, bad arts. But, so it's mostly patient-generated modes that you'll see, like pressure support, CPAP, BiPAP, and to an extent SIMV, but not as much. PRVC is another one that's patient-controlled, even though control is in there. It's just that the patient's able to initiate a breath is the good thing about PRVC, and that's why it's so favored. Plus, it allows us to control their overall volume so they don't overbreathe and don't become hypoglottic. So I would go by 5 to 7 milliliters per kid if you're trying to calculate an appropriate type of... All right, any questions on the modes of ventilation? I would, if you haven't already, I would construct a table and ask yourself first, is this patient-generated or machine-generated? And control is in the name, or regulated is in the name, if we're doing some of the regulation or control. That might help if you just spell it out and get those, you know, remember my thing about learning is try to keep it simple and deconstruct it. So, any other questions about mechanical ventilation? There will also be probably 5 medication calculations, so I would go back and run a couple of those bys, but you know your areas of weakness, if it's my
opinion. Excuse me, we have a question. We have a question, Simon. ATL says frequency vents that it's 60 to 30,000 cycles per minute. Is that the same as the 100 to 140 times per minute?
Oh. Are you talking about high frequency? High
frequency? Yeah. Okay.
That's almost always used in babies, in neonates, in ICU with any kind of good outcomes. The outcomes for adults is not. So it's really just now been taken off of experimental for adults. So you won't see it done. But to answer your question, it depends. It is strictly a call by the provider.
No.
And,
okay. So my question was.
Listen to the questions, okay? It's a lot of talking in this classroom.
Looking at her lecture and what she outlined, she says 100 to 140 times per minute with 3 to 7 mils per kg of tidal volume. When you look at ATI, it says that it's 60 to 3,000 cycles per minute. Is that the same thing?
No, it's not really. But I don't want to split hairs over something else. Don't worry about hyperreps. Just know that it exists. It's kind of like ECMO. That is a very specialized, very individually maintained. I don't know why ATI put that in there, except to make the comment that, just like Denise did, it is high frequency with low tidal volume. So you're keeping them in almost a constant state of inspiration. That's the key to high breathe. You're going at tidal volumes that are very, very low, rate very, very high, so they are almost always in an inspiratory cycle so that they get more oxygen. That's the premise of high breathe. So don't worry about it any further than that, okay? Don't get caught up in the numbers, because that's going to change from patient to patient, from institution to institution. Same thing with ECMO. Just know that it exists. It's the best we can give them. If they've got very, very bad ARDS, like our COVID patients go straight from sepsis to ARDS. By the time they get in the emergency room, a lot of them were already in ARDS. So, or at least it was at the cusp. We are coming out of that, thank God, in Greyhound, as long as these variances these variant viruses don't get us bad. But in here in Shreveport, now it depends on where you go to practice, and you're going to be practicing still while we're in the middle of this, or at least at the tip of the iceberg. I hope we're almost at the end. I don't know. Dr. Fauci says that we're not, but we're still in it. But anyway, that's all to say that with ECMO, you are bypassing the lungs completely, allowing them to heal. It is a complete, but it's basically, it came from the neonatal world where they couldn't get a kid off the vent and off a bypass during cardiac surgery, and they just took the kid and the bypass unit into the NICU and said, okay, this is working. And so they started kind of using it more and more. Strangely enough, in kids, it's the cardiac kids that have good outcomes. The respiratory kids, not so much. But with the adult world, when it finally started seeping into the adult world in the 80s, the adult, this is true still, adult respiratory patients have better outcomes than cardiac patients on ECMO. So you don't very rarely see a patient who's on ECMO. Usually they'll transition them to LVADs. And that comes with the bypass commentary. If somebody is just unable, or with MIs especially, big anterior lateral MIs will go on LVADs or BIVADs, right and left, but usually left ventricular device. But with ECMO, you're bypassing the lungs completely. And that's why they can be off the vent and still on ECMO. And we have a patient like that in MICU now. He's been off the vent for several days, but he's still on ECMO. But process of getting them off is very similar to getting them off of intra-aortic balloon pump. We've got to stabilize their oxygenation to the point where they can be weaned off of ECMO. But it's the primo of when they're in such bad ARDS that we cannot ventilate nor oxygenate on traditional modes without extremely high levels of PEEP. So if somebody's on 16 of PEEP, what is your primary assessment or assessments? You get in report that your patient is on PRVC 60%, or no, here's a real one, PRVC 80%, PEEP of 12, tidal volume of 400, 450. What are you thinking? If you think like a nurse, what's the first thing you're going to do when you walk into that room?
Listen to breath sounds.
When you assess that patient.
Did somebody say listen, didn't you? Listen to lung sounds?
Yeah, there you go. Make sure they don't have a pneumothorax. Okay, so what's the next thing you're going to do?
What else do you
do? You're on mechanical ventilation. There's several assessments that you want to make.
Make sure they're like check their vitals.
Breath sounds is one. I hear crickets.
Check their blood pressure.
Good. What else?
O2 sat.
Suction, maybe?
Suctioning? Oh, yeah.
No. How's their airway?
She meant like. Midline. Make sure the trachea is midline.
Yeah. Somebody's doing tension pneumothorax. Pneumothoraxes are bad. There's no doubt about it. They're going to be
pushed.
attention pneumothorax is a medical emergency. So that's what you want to be sure and do, is make sure that trach is midline and that the blood pressure is not showing signs of hitting the dirt, because that's what you're going to see with tension. All right, so, and those can happen very quickly on these high levels of P, 12, 16, I've seen as high as 20. Terry, Kathy, what's the highest you've seen?
For what?
Peep.
I think the highest I've seen one time was maybe like 20, but it was like, that was an ECMO type situation, I think. It was not the norm. But mostly I always see 5 to 10.
I think I've just seen 12.
First thing that you want to think about is assessment and assessing for pneumothorax, tension pneumothorax, any signs of barotrauma, cardiac output issues. And then you're also going to use, you're going to be assessing O2 sat, you're going to be assessing your blood gases. You're going to have to be looking at those and seeing what that's doing to their overall blood gases. And what about that 80%? Does that bother you? And I'm having to use 12 centimeters of P and 80%.
Yeah.
Oh, what might be one of my goals today?
So toxicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't want O2 toxicity, so we bring it down to 50. The goal 30, maybe? I know, definitely.
Sounds like y'all got a little bit more studying to do, but you've also done a whole lot. So I commend you for that. And do y'all have any other questions? It's 11 o'clock now. I don't want to keep you any over time. But this test will also include end of life, does it not, Kathy?
It does.
Any questions on end of life while Kathy's here?
Well, we need to know.
I think the biggest thing from an NCLEX standard, and y'all know that.
What to say?
Closely with a company that writes it. So anyway, the biggest thing is ethical right now. With and cultural issues within the body. So I would go at it from that standpoint, especially the legal. Kathy, you didn't talk a whole lot about cultural, but that kind of comes into.
Yeah, I did say some things about, you know, knowing your culture of the area where you live, because it's not the same across the country. And if you guys want to be travel nurses, and I hear a lot of people want to do that, you might want to have one of the things that you do when you go to an area that's very different from the deep south is, you know, the people in the northeast are very different from the people in the deep south, who are very different from the Gulf Coast, who are different from the southwest, who are very different from Northern California.
Very much so. There's a pocket guide now that they use when a lot of travel nurses I've known have a little, it's a little pocket guide that goes through some of the major cultures like Muslim, Buddhist, those kind of things that you run into that you don't see a lot of here, but the overall issue with end of life sometimes.
And don't be afraid to ask for friends. We all have friends now who are Muslim and Asian and Jewish and everything. Ask your colleagues and friends, how do you approach things differently? What do I need to be, what kind of sensitivity do I need to have?
So end of life. Cabbage, temporary pacing, permanent pacing, pulmonary one, which was failure, and pulmonary two, mechanical ventilation. Last call for questions. Now, we're going to be doing certain things in clinical that may or may not help. I will tell you that there's some practice mechanical ventilation options. No, if they don't want to hear me, that's okay. It's 11 o'clock. Class is over. But
they won't. They would like the study guide. We're not seeing it. So I just remember we're going to post it with.
Oh, the cardiac graphic?
No. I know there was a study guide you mentioned in the beginning.
Yeah. Okay, I'll check and make sure it's
I'm
up
not
there.
Seeing it. I checked in A and B on the Google and I don't see anything.
Yeah, we don't see
it. I'll put it up. As well as the mechanical ventilation practice questions. Do y'all have those, Terry and Kathy?
No. They don't see them either.
No.
All right. And I have an ARDS
case study. I think we've already looked at it, but
the only thing that I know
I'll
is
post all that
the ventilator
on the 4120, and y'all go after it. And in clinical, we'll be talking about a lot of this.
Okay.
Y'all be asking a lot of questions, and I bet you'll be in good shape for Thursday morning. Until then, peace.